Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, welcome to another Rahalastapa. This one recorded back in December 2019. It was a simpler time, wasn't it? Boris Johnson hadn't yet been re-elected Prime Minister. We could touch one another. Do you remember that? We could spit in each other's faces and it was just a bit of a laugh. We'll get back to those times, my friend. Don't worry, it'll all be good. The guest is Fern Brady. We're in front of the biggest live audience Rahalastapa has ever had in Glasgow. Wonderful crowd. And maybe we'll never be able to gather in these numbers ever again. And that will be my excuse if I never get an audience that big again. So if you are bored during lockdown... there's lots of things you can do. You can become a badger and see hours and hours of backstage videos and all my stand-up shows. GoFasterStrike.com/badges, loads of extras. And if you don't want to spend any money, you can come to twitch.tv/RKHerring and watch me, usually at 8 o'clock in the morning, clearing stones off a field, usually 7:30 of an evening, playing snooker against myself. On Wednesdays at 8 p.m, I am doing a live-streamed Rahalastapa with some of the biggest names in the world of comedy and beyond. And we might chuck in some other stuff. So I know Me14 is very keen to show you more of his stamp collection. There's the Queen Mother. He loves her. And we might do some other stuff as well. I play Football Manager sometimes. We might do some Scrabble. And I'm going to just use it whatever I can to create funny laughs for you. It's all free. You can follow me and get notifications when I'm on. If you want to give some money, you can. You can subscribe. If you're with Amazon Prime, you can give a free £5 a month to me, if you can be bothered to link your accounts, find out how to subscribe. There's a video in the YouTube channel, Herring1967, on YouTube, which will explain how that is done. You just have to remember to go back once a month and resubscribe once you've linked the accounts and done all the initial business. It's a little bit tricky to start with, but it's £5 free that Ian Amazon is sitting on. He doesn't want to give it away, but he has to if you find the secret. He's like a leprechaun sitting on a pile of gold. and he's hoping no one knows it's there. But make him pay. Make him pay for my comedy. All that money goes towards making more podcasts, and we're donating some to the Heckle the Virus campaign at justgiving.com. We'll be giving £2,000 this month as a result of Twitch subscriptions and also the extra revenue we raised from the As It Occurs to Me feed on Rahelastapur. That's out every Friday, so do listen to that, and you'll be helping us give money to comedians and also the cast of A. Ottima, who are currently all out of work. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy a brilliant Rahelastapur with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Fern Brady. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Glasgow Theatre Royal. Please welcome a man who is disappointed he didn't get the interview with Prince Andrew. It's Richard Herring!
Fuck yeah! Hello, Glasgow! Biggest gig ever! You're the biggest audience! Biggest audience we've ever had! It's the first time I've ever done a podcast in Scotland. It's amazing. I mean, I've done about 100 in Edinburgh. That doesn't count, does it, Glasgow? That doesn't count! We know that doesn't count here. Welcome to Richard Herring's Longshank Stone Theft podcast. Got to come up with new ideas. I haven't said whether I'm pro or anti it yet, so don't get, be hissing me for the memory of Edward. They don't forget here in Scotland, I tell you. Edward I, still very unpopular character. You've got to come up with a new... I thought I'd do a podcast now, sort of history thing, just about the Stone Theft. It's all very well doing this when I'm in London, isn't it, Rich? It's all very well doing your funny Scotch accent. Now there's 1,200 actual Glaswegians in front of you. You're not so brave. Will I get out alive? We'll see. I was hanging around in the Arlington Bar the other day where the real Stoniskin was taken when it was stolen in 1951 by some students. And they claimed that the one they gave back was a counterfeit copy, and the real one sits on the bar of that pub. Do you know that? They gave the stupid Sassenachs a replica, didn't they? That's what you did. And a drunk man sitting at that bar who believes that story is true, he told me it calls it Rahelastapur. So we'll see if that catches on. So what's been going on? It's been quite a trip. I'll mention Prince Andrew before I got onto the trip. Yeah, Prince Andrew... I'd always wanted him as a guest. He's done an interview. I mean, this is going out in months' time, but I think people might still remember. He finally did an interview. I mean, if he did this interview, my producer Ben would have had to bleep pretty much everything he said as it incriminated him. So he did say he was going to go for a second interview with someone else. I was hoping it would be us, but then he kind of got... His mum said he wasn't allowed to be in the royal family anymore. And I reckon if he was in a human centipede, Jeffrey Epstein would be at the front, because, you know, he's so honourable. That's the thing with Prince Andrew. He would just have to thank him for all he did for him. It's been quite a trip. We come up today on the train. The trains were... I thought I was going to make it. We had to... the train down to London to come up to Glasgow was cancelled, so I had to get a cab across to Milton Keynes. It cost £120. How much I care about you, Glasgow. I sort of worry sometimes about coming to Glasgow. It's got this reputation of being a rough place. It's not true. I was on the platform of Milton Keynes railway station at 10:15 a.m. My tour manager, James, was wearing one of those Palestinian kind of black and white kind of... The kind of scarf that a dick wears, to be fair. I didn't say anything to him about that, but you know the kind of... You know the kind of thing I mean. This guy drinking a like energy drink and looking a bit shaky came up to him and said, "Do they do those in men's, mate?" And he went, "What?" He said, "He took him about four to goes before we understood." And James said, "Are you taking the piss?" He said, "Yeah, I am taking the piss." And he was like, literally, he was trying to have a fight with us. It's 10:15, mate. We've both got trains to get. Why are you trying to get into a fight? So we sort of started walking away, and I was laughing mainly because I thought it was quite a funny joke. And he said, He said, "Are you laughing at me?" I said, "No, I'm laughing at you. I thought that's what you wanted." He said, "Do you think you're funny?" I said, "Well, yeah, I do. I think I am funny." But in the end, it was a bit intimidating, so we told on him to the member of staff. It was very good. The guy came down and calmed dinner. And then when the man came to him and he said, and I said, "It's being a bit threatening and weird.
It was literally out of nowhere. The guy said, he said I had a shit tracksuit. Which he did, but we didn't. It's interesting he was then dissing himself. So we got away without being beaten up, but it was close. Even before we got to Glasgow. But we are here now. So I'm going to crack straight on because our guest is doubling up tonight. She has another gig if you want to go and see her after she's been on here. She is probably best known for selecting the music for ITV programmes. We'll talk about that in a second. Will you please welcome the amazing Fern Brady, ladies and gentlemen? Sit down. Put the microphone here.
Hiya.
Hello. Love to see you again. I just saw you back there. It's good. I'm seeing you here now.
How did you know about that job?
I know everything about you. I've done some research this time, Fern. Fern was on in there when I did the Edinburgh Fringe version. I didn't really do any research for that one. I was doing them every day. It was hard, but I've really looked into your life this time. Yeah, you did. So for a while, you were selecting the music for things like who's been framed and stuff like that.
You've been framed.
who's been framed? So it's Prince Andrew. Am I right, guys? Yeah. Jeffrey Epstein. Who's with me? Yeah, Glasgow's pretty much behind me on those two.
Yeah, for about 4 months, I had this job where. Basically, anytime someone falls off a ladder and you've been framed, I had to pick the funny music to go over it. or the Jeremy Kyle Christmas special, you had to pick like the sad music for when people get reunited with their birth parents. And I got sacked for that, yeah.
Were you choosing inappropriate
music? I did do that a couple of times.
What did you do? Which inappropriate music did you choose? Are you not allowed to say?
Just for a little joke, there was like a thing about like soldiers and Poppy Day, and I put like sort of cheerful hijinks music over it. but it didn't go out, did it? No, it didn't go out. But I'd be like, oh, look at this. And they hated that.
I said, you can't do that. You've got to be serious. Yeah. You've got to take this job seriously.
Yeah.
You've Been Framed is a very important show. Yeah. Well, who had the last laugh, you or Jeremy Kyle? That is the question.
He was so odd looking in person. Like, right. he'd just had an eye left. Like, he'd had his eye bags cut out in plastic surgery. And he was very small and yellow.
He spent all his money and just think, I'll get some plastic surgery done, cosmetic surgery, and then bang, you're out.
Yeah, well, I get in trouble for saying that because it is true. Yeah. He just had his face done.
Yeah. I know, you're very honest, Fern. That's right. What I like about you. You don't care. And that's a very good thing. So, you were born in Bathgate.
Yeah.
Near Edinburgh, or part of it, is it in Edinburgh?
It still feels weird being honest that I'm from Bathgate because I'm used to lying and saying I'm from Edinburgh for years. And then Lewis Capaldi kind of put it on the map and it was great. Because before that we just had Susan Boyle and that's not as good.
She's very good. She's very good as well. We did... The two of them. Not bad. Let's talk about this. You were on Russia Today, the news. I was on the pilot of this show. I didn't really know what Russia Today was when I went on it.
Yeah.
It wasn't broadcast, but I was on the pilot of this thing. It's called The News Thing, is it, with... Sam Delaney. And me and Sarah Pascoe did it, and then we found out what it was, and then we went, oh. And they asked us to come back again. We said, no, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Alex Salmond was on as well. Probably by the time this goes out, we can say no. We won't say it just in case.
For about a year, I lived off that terrible Russia Today programme.
Yeah.
Basically, Russia Today has a comedy panel show that it's really dodgy because obviously no one tunes into Russia Today for the comedy. But the money was amazing. On a Friday, like a limo would come and pick you up, and then you'd get all this money, and you'd be on with really weird people, like Sean Ryder for the Happy Mondays.
Yeah.
I was on with him twice, and he's like a nice man, but he's fucked from drugs. And I felt okay about doing the programme because I sort of felt, I'm maybe on my way up in comedy. But Sean Ryder, I remember him, his chewing gum was getting stuck to his veneers and we had to stop filming because it was all coming out of his mouth. And so you'd have Sean Ryder on, then they'd have like Nigel Farage on. They'd always have like the most evil politicians, yeah. And then I would meet them and they would be really charming in person.
Not Farage, though.
I didn't do an episode with him, but Simon Danshock, do you remember him?
No, I don't.
He was like a Labour, he was a Labour politician. And at one point, he was going on like double dates with his ex-wife and his new mistress.
Wow.
And just up to, I think he was just a sort of perv.
Right.
He was lovely.
Was it like a sitcom double date where his wife was on one side of the restaurant and his mistress was on the other side? That he had to go between the two?
No, they all went on nights together. Out, so they were a throuple, basically.
That's nice. I mean, if anyone's up for doing that with me and my wife, just do give me a ring and let me know.
Ken Livingston,
was on.
Don't know, he was like a little lizard thing. I don't like him.
Did he mention Hitler?
No, he didn't really talk to us, to be honest. He was a bit up it. And you can't be up yourself when you're doing Russia Today's comedy panel show because it's hard times. And then my boyfriend kept saying, this is such an unethical programme to be doing and you have to stop taking the money because I'd left off it for about a year. And then I was like, right, better stop now.
Yeah. We made that decision after...
I know, I feel quite bad.
But we did, I did... It's called RT. You think, I'll go on RT, that's fine.
Shit, I remember the day I stopped doing it. This Salisbury thing had happened.
Okay.
Right?
Maybe the Russians aren't that nice after all.
Right.
No one's proved they did it.
One of the topics was, how do we know the Russians did this? And I was like, I don't think I can go on and do that. And then just last minute before we started filming, the producer was like, oh, yeah, we're not going to do this as a topic. And then I stopped doing it after that.
Because that was too much to admit on Russia Today that they might have done. It would have been too much. Incredible. Let's go straight in because I keep forgetting to do emergency questions. Let's have an early emergency question and see where we get to. I'm going to go random. It's not going to be that page because that doesn't work. This is a Christmas-based one. What is the smallest amount of money you have received in a Christmas card from an elderly relative? I think she's like she's my auntie, great auntie's daughter. Does that make her some first cousin or something? Still sends me £5 for Christmas, like a £5 note.
No, I've always got at least 10 or 20 pounds. But someone I knew in Bathgate, her sister gave her just a chip for Christmas Day. And that always stuck in my head.
In Bathgate, that's worth a lot. That's like having cigarettes in prison. How much did you get? Because you're a lot younger than me. How much did you get from the Tooth Fairy when you... Because now I've got kids, I've got to start working out how much I'm going to give to the from the Tooth Fairy for teeth. Do you remember how much you got for your teeth?
No, I genuinely can't remember, but I used to write really earnest letters to the Tooth Fairy, and I was quite embarrassed when I found out it was my mum. No, I can't remember.
You were very innocent. You were talking backstage about believing like a badger was a real badger in school and it turned out to be a puppet badger.
Yeah.
You were very trusting, believing child.
Yeah.
Oh, it's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking that we lie. Why do we lie to our kids about stuff? And then it's fun, like, tricking them, I have to say. I love it. My son's two, and he just about started to understand Father Christmas, so I've told him he'll come down the chimney. He goes, Father Christmas, chimney. He's into the lie, and it's fucking hilarious because it's us. It's us. We don't even dress up.
My mum used to, like, tell mad lies to us all the time. She told us she was a contestant on the Crystal Maze. She told us that she was going on blind date and leaving my dad. One time she said that we were all moving to the Isle of Skye, and that was really fucked up because I went in and like told my teachers and I was like, listen, I'm leaving school. And it was only when my best mate's mum phoned up my mum and was like, oh, she's crying and stuff. Then my mum was like, oh, it was just a joke because
it's good.
Child reading's boring.
Yeah.
She told my brother she was a demon one time.
I'd be scared to tell my kids stuff like that because I think they'd kill me in my sleep if they thought that was a possibility. Now, tell me, you did a gig this week, I saw on Twitter, where you were playing to naturists, so that everyone was naked in the audience.
Yeah, I did a gig to the British Naturist Society, and the number of people that I've told this to that went, were they naked? That? Oh, yeah, otherwise it would just be a gig, wouldn't it? I wouldn't know.
They might be having a night off. Go, look, we like taking our clothes off, but no need to take the piss.
Aye, they were. It was a really nice gig, but when I got the email about it at the time, I was kind of busy, and I don't really read emails properly, so I just thought it was a gig. And then the guy was like, "Oh no, they're all going to be naked. I can assure you, they're not sex people. We've checked." but why do you want to go to a comedy gig in November, like in the cold with no clothes on? And it was. I just don't know where even to start. All right, they had gender-neutral toilets, which is, like, cool. I'm fine with that at other gigs. Until you're at a nudist gig and you're just washing your hands in the toilet and a 20-stone naked man appears behind you in the mirror like a fucking vision from hell. So that happened. And he made eye contact with me, as I have to say, that this is a bit much, eh?
Yeah.
I went to get my pen to write my jokes out my bag, and then the organiser was like, "Oh, do you need help with that?" And I realised I would have to have my face basically next to his balls to get stuff out of my bag. So I was like, no, it's all right. It was cool seeing a woman clap at your jokes while her tits just flap up and down.
I would like to see that.
You know when you... Do you know when you smash a gig and everyone rushes over at the end and they want selfies, but they're all naked? That happened as well. But I've got these sort of perverts come to some of my shows because I attract, like, mental people to my gigs.
Yeah, that must be awful. Man, it's so terrible. Are you right, Colin? Colin and Liam there? They might come to some of your gigs, Colin.
Colin.
You know Colin.
there was a couple of guys came up to me to get naked selfies at the end, and I was sure I recognised them for their gigs, and I was like, surely they wouldn't fucking come to a nudist gig.
But they did. So they were just guys who weren't people were pretending to be naturists in order to get a naked
That's
photo with you.
That's quite egotistical for me, I think. But they looked really familiar. It was cool. Two women were touching each other up all the way through the show.
They were sex people. I knew they were sex people. What happens if a guy gets, like, aroused during... Did that happen?
Yeah, a man was holding his welly down during my set.
This is...
Like, what if a man's doing that... and he was really fit.
Right.
Because I kept looking at him, and then he was looking at me holding his welly down. And I was like, I think he likes me. listen to this, though. So my boyfriend argues with me about anything. Like, he'll try and argue with me about anything. And he said, "Oh, you won't see any wellies at the nudist gig." I fucking phoned him after the gig and I was like, "What are you talking about? Like, I'm going to see wellies dancing in my dreams forever."
Yeah, it's the reason people wear clothes. I mean, like you're saying backstage, they had to put towels on the seats. You know, it's just rude. And it's just rude because, you know, people, you don't want to have people's naked bum on your seat, do you? I was sitting on one of my sofas without any pants on and my wife got upset. So, you know, that's in my house. Oh. I put my leg underneath, so there wasn't contact between.
Yeah, but I'm looking at buying, like, quite an expensive sofa at the moment for the first time in my life. So I wouldn't want anyone to sit on it naked.
Not even me. No, I mean, if you were married to me, she's married. Married to me. So that's part of the wedding vows. You have to put up with a man with his bare ass on. It was a leather sofa. it felt good. Made me want to become a naturist. right, let's talk a bit about you at school, because I think there's a lot, just from what we've talked about before, there's a lot in there. But you, I think before we talked about you claim you had a thick glasses and a moustache at school.
You're saying I claimed that, yeah. Like it was a good thing.
Well, you say it, but you're a comedian, so you could be exaggerating for comic.
No, events. I'm not exaggerating. I'll show you Instagram pictures of it.
You wore an orange tracksuit to school?
Yeah, my mum let me pick my own clothes, and I always wore pretty mad androgynous clothes, and everyone called me happy.
Right.
But I thought they were calling me hippie because I ate loads of fruit and my mum gave me quite hippie-ish foods. Like, I remember we were like the only white people in West Lothian eating samosas, and it was well before samosas were a thing.
Yeah.
And everyone called me hippie, and then I asked one of my bullies at school why they were calling me that, and they were like, it's not because of your clothes, it's because of your big hippie moustache.
Nicely asked, where they got the idea of you having one of the bullies so you can ask questions. Can I ask you, just before you bully me, can I just ask you why? Yeah, I'm the friendly bully. I'll talk to you before beating you up. And you wear a sari to the school disco, is that right? As well?
Yeah, how do you know?
I know everything about you.
Yeah.
I've rung up Lewis Capaldi. I said, do you want give me any dirt?
Yeah, I had a sari on and I had sort of henna printed on my hands. I was dead into other cultures.
You were with samosas, saris.
Yeah. That doesn't go well where I'm from, though. It just seems really weird.
Aw. So sweet. And I would think we did talk about this before. You were very good at the piano. You've got grade 8 piano.
No, grade 6.
Oh, grade 6.
I don't know why I'm saying that like someone's going to be fucking checking.
Well, go to whichever paper that was. And you were the Young Musician of the Year 2001.
Bathgate Rotary Club's Young Musician of the Year. That's right. Man, there were so many other dorks at that competition. I really felt like I fitted in.
And you still play the piano. You relax by playing the piano.
Yeah, I got a piano and started playing it again.
How's that going? Are you still good?
It took me a wee bit and then I got back into it. And it's good. Because my neighbours are really noisy, so I just play it dead loudly and shout at them. And
what kind of noise do your neighbours make?
They've got kids and they jump up and down a lot and shout. So
fuckers. Kids, I mean, they're bad. And are you obsessed with urban foxes? I know you've done some.
Oh no, that was like 10 years. Was that it? Was when I started comedy.
Okay. What's your problem? There's a lot of kids being killed by urban foxes. Was that what you...
Well, it was more just I was interested at the time in misleading news stories or how like the Daily Mail would get fixated on a topic and then just keep going and going with it.
Yeah.
But that was like the first bit of stand-up I did. I feel stupid talking about it.
Okay, we don't have to talk about it. You were a journalist, of course.
I was training to be a news reporter in Sheffield and then I dropped out because I was doing too much comedy and they were like, you have to stop doing as many gigs or drop out of the course. So I dropped out. And then one of my journalist friends at the time, who's now like, I think he's like the sports editor at The Independent or something. Right. He was like, you're making such a big mistake to drop out of journalism. But it was just so boring. Like, you had to learn to cover local council meetings. And I remember having to write a story about a crow with his foot trapped in a roof. And it was just like... And then my journalism tutor was like, oh, it's amazing the way you describe the crow like it's a little man. And I thought, yeah, because I'm a stoner and I shouldn't be here. I think it's one of those jobs that people think is going to be great, but isn't.
Well, local news is tough. You know, I wouldn't think Sheffield would have better stories than a crow trapped in a roof.
Well, you have
I'm
to
going
start...
there next, so, you know, you'll have to let me know about Sheffield.
You have to start off on basic stuff. That's how you have to get into it. Like, can you somebody that just covered the Edinburgh trams for years and years and years while they got built? So you kind of have to really want to do journalism to do that kind of thing.
Good. Well, I'm glad you got out. You got out. You actually did stand up. We did talk about this before. But you did stand up as like for an article, and then which happens all the time. Like journalists are always doing. I'll try stand up and see how that goes. I don't think anyone else has become a stand up after doing that.
I know. See, during the Fringe. Oh no, I can't say that. But
sure, you can.
All friends here. Well, I won't get in trouble now. There was this Sun journalist. I'd done an interview with a Sun journalist, and then he kept texting me after, like at all hours, being like, "Oh, I'm doing an article where I try stand up." Couldn't give a fuck. I've done the interview now to plug tickets for my friend's show. I'm done with you, right? And he just kept texting and texting, being like, "Don't you want to know about my little experiment where I try stand up for the Sun?" Fuck off. Anyway.
Never give a journalist your phone number.
I know, I just, it never happened to me before, but it was, yeah, it was really odd.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Well, let's talk. You said that there's a lot of sexism still in stand-up, so that seems to segue quite nicely into that. Have you found that working your way up through the clubs? Is that from like the people running the clubs and the other comedians? You're still being treated?
Oh well, I'm okay. It's okay now. Well,
yeah.
So where would I even begin? on the way up, it's terrible.
Yeah.
But you kind of put the blinkers on to, because you can't. I remember when I was coming up, I was like, "Oh, it's not so bad," but it was terrible. But you just had to kind of put your blinkers on, otherwise you would get angry about it all the time.
In terms of being prejudiced against you, or people just treating you in an inappropriate manner.
I remember when I'll need to be careful with this. Not that I exit. Just things like comedians. I remember seeing this comedian when all the Me Too stuff came out. This comedian being like, "Oh, this is terrible. What's happening to women?" And I thought, you fucking went on about how lovely my legs looked in a dress backstage at a gig. Going, yeah. Would say pervy things like that. Or there was a promoter when I started who was like, "You're one of the best three open spots I've ever seen. And the other ones were Alan Carr and some other prick, right?" For the North England. And then he booked me for loads of gigs. And I was like, "Oh, it must be because I'm amazing at stand-up." It wasn't. I was pish at stand-up. And as soon as I turned up to his club with some guy that I was seeing, I got dropped that. And it's only now I'd realised the promoter thought I was going to shag him. And that was the only reason I was getting booked. So there's always a lot of...
I reckon I know who it is. I'll say backstage.
Yeah.
There was a promoter who used to... My wife, when she was doing stand-up, she hopes she'll go back to doing again, but he would just keep giving open spots, but he'd book like 10 open spots ahead.
Oh, you no, go, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but you go, that's you can't do that. An open spot is to then get a paid spot. You can't go, "I'll give you 5 open spots," because if you do a good open spot, you should get paid, right, for the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just dozens and dozens of things, or... Yeah.
Do you think it's better now, though, or not? Or do you think it's better for you because you're more established? Do you think it's...
Yeah.
Do you think things have changed? In the last 2 or 3 years, have things changed?
People are shitting themselves now. It's great. And by people, I mean men.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the vision I always had for the future is happening. Like, we had this female comedians WhatsApp group where we talked about all the perverts in comedy. and the same names were coming up again and again, and it was amazing because you really can't talk about that stuff when you're coming up in comedy because you'll get frozen out quickly. You have to really suck up to people when you start. Yeah. So it's quite difficult. Because I remember people saying I was being a bitch early on for because I wouldn't really put up with guys being pervy. Or the thing of having to hug people that you've just met because they want to press against your tits. That's ended since the Me Too stuff.
Right.
But then it kind of sucks because then there's people like, do you know Brett Goldstein? He's this really fit comedian.
Yeah.
The nice guys like that that are rides don't hug you anymore. And then the people that are dirty perverts still try and go and
Well, you can go and hug them, though. That's all right. That's allowed, right?
That's true.
Until the Me 3 movement comes out. And men go, actually, it's men who get harassed the most.
But you still see club lineups where, well, there's a popular chain of clubs.
Okay.
Not the Stand.
No, I'm guessing it's not the Stand.
No, another chain of clubs that just has largely all male lineups. Well, not just that. There's loads of different clubs that will just.
I mean, it's such a mystery
lineups.
As to which one you're talking about. There's, no, but carry on.
Well, it could be. Yeah, there's a couple. Or there's places that I tried and tried and tried to get in with for years and I couldn't, and they had shit guys on instead. And then it was only once I didn't need to do those gigs anymore that people started trying to book me for them, which is frustrating.
I think what's maybe weird about the circuit is that the older acts haven't. When I started, it was nearly all young people. There weren't really anyone over 30 or 40. And if anyone became successful, they moved on. And now there's so many people doing it that the guys in their 40s and 50s haven't, you know, there's nothing, they're still doing the circuit, and then there's 1,000 other people coming up beneath them. So it's sort of, some of the old clubs still book the people they've been booking for 20 or 30 years, you know, so it's harder for new people to get started. But it was more men in those days. So they're kind of staying true to their mates from the early days. But then it gets harder to come through. But then, you know, it's got to be a meritocracy, and it's got to be people coming through because they're interesting and good. I think especially for stand-up to survive, which is it's getting harder to do for stand-up clubs to work, I think.
Yeah, you can't make money off the circuit. No. I'm just remembering stuff that happened when I was an open spot. There's this comedian I loved when I was new, and he's you'd know him because he's been in something quite big. I'll tell you after. and I thought he was such a good comedian. And then after I'd been on and done my 10 minutes, he was like, give it up for Fern Brady, everyone, and got them to clap. And he went, I shagged her. And I just was like, why would you say that? So you get things like that, or people just saying sexual things about you on stage, getting introduced as the lovely Fern Brady. I'm not lovely. Getting introduced as the beautiful Fern Brady when I'm not. Like, I hated it. Like, you would never introduce a male comedian as beautiful or lovely.
Brett Goldstein, I would. It's the gorgeous Brett Goldstein.
Alfie Brown, I've seen introduced as, because he's really good looking.
Yeah. The feminine Alfie Brown, I would say. The femininely beautiful Alfie Brown. No. No, I wouldn't say that. He's a very good comedian. He's a nasty, nasty comedian. He's good.
Oh, he's so filthy.
So I saw you on Roast Battle. We did Roast Battle on the same day. And you've done that before, haven't you?
Oh, so we did. Yeah.
That Comedy Central is stopping making new programming, so there might not be any more series of that. But you've done it a couple of times, right?
Yeah, that was my second. I enjoyed this one much better.
Right.
I roasted my friend Phil Wang. And it was good. He ruined me though, because for every joke that I had, he'd done like 5 jokes.
Yeah. Do people know this show? It's basically comedians. Yeah, you're meant to say the most nasty things about each other you can within certain parameters. There's some things you're not allowed to. There's a list of things you're not allowed to joke about. Did they tell you this list? And it's sort of weird because there's some things on it you kind of think, well, why is that on the list? You know, because there'll be certain notorious cases of nasty things happening to especially children that they say they'll mention. But then there'll be like a specific terrorist incident. And you go, why that one specifically? Is like, why have people been coming in doing loads of jokes about that terrorist incident in Roast Battle? It doesn't seem very likely, but yeah.
Yeah, there's so much. They're like, the show where anything goes apart from the dozens of jokes we're going to try and take off you. And it's always, it's weird though, because they'll try and put like, they've had, there's really not much I can say without, I'll get in trouble with my agent.
I don't want to get you into trouble. That's
but watch Roast Battle out in January.
It's good. You were very fond. But it was a good programme in the sense that it's got a lot, apart from me, a lot of new, young, up and coming. There was me. I felt like it was felt to me like I was in Blind Date when they have the old couples on. I thought, oh.
Or
and everyone goes, ugh. Yeah. So it's but it was lots of newer people and very good. Everyone was really good on it, I thought.
Who were you up against?
I was up against Sarah Baron, who's, who in female terms is very, very old. She's 40 years old and still on TV. That's,
yeah.
I mean, that was basically my line, was, that's about 140 in female on TV years. It's like a dog.
I really want to see her show.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's amazing. She was brilliant as well on it. But that'll be coming up.
Did you not think the audience at that, though, are a bit... The audience, because we don't have a tradition of doing comedy roasts in the UK.
Yeah.
Sometimes if they do an insult about your looks on it, the audience will freak out, like, but that's all the woman has. It's like, yeah, but it's a roast. We're supposed to be saying horrible things because Phil said I looked like a trans Fred Flintstone. The worst thing was just before we went on, I was wearing a dress and I tried to look girly for once. And I was like, do I look nice? And he was like, you look lovely. And he said it really earnestly, then just fucking ruined me.
Well, if you were being horrible, I mean, if you start being horrible before you got on, that's a different thing then.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Right, we'll do some more emergency questions. I'll do some classics. I'm trying to remember if I asked you any of these in the past. So I'll try and do one that we haven't asked before. Did I ask you about having a time-travelling finger last time you were on?
Yeah,
I think I did.
Yeah.
I won't ask you that again. That would be awful. Did I ask you the human centipede one last time?
No, but I haven't seen that film.
You know what it is, though, right?
No.
Well, The Human Centipede is a beautiful romantic film. About
bums sewn together.
Oh, if only it were. If only it was that would be quite lovely. Because if everyone just had their bums sewn together, it would just be like you'd be eating and then, oh, it's a bit difficult to poo. It might be worse. It's people having their mouths in a line sewed to the anus of the person in front of them. So the person at the front... Yeah, some fans. Unsurprising, there were some fans of that in Glasgow. So the person at the front can eat, and then they poo in the mouth of the person behind them who poos in the mouth. It poos all the food, the poo that's come through. So double-filtered poo. No, it's a real-life thing that we're all going to try later.
It was an art house film.
Well, it's not. I mean, I wouldn't say it's an art house film. So I think... Certainly when you get Human Centipede 3, I think any pretense of art will have been left behind. No, it's not. It's a sort of distasteful horror film. So a mad scientist sews three people together, mouth to anus. So, the one at the end has nothing on his anus and the one at... Yeah, only three. I mean, you could go for longer. I actually have never watched the film because it sounds disgusting. I'm imagining... If it was Human Centipede 4, it should get to be more people. It should be four people, shouldn't it?
What year was it made?
That's the first question everyone asks when they hear this.
Because I hate black and white.
I'm not sure what year it was. It's been around for a while. I'd say 15 to 20 years ago. Any aficionados? I mean, it's an embarrassing question to know the answer to. Richard, it was filmed in 2005, as everyone knows. 2010. Were you in it? What was that? You auditioned. So my question is, if you were in a human centipede and you're in the middle and you got to choose who's at the front and who's at the back, who would you have in front of you and who would you have behind you?
I would have Alfie Brown behind me.
Okay.
Because he's really dirty.
Yeah, he's dirty and he would like it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then no one could see his pretty face.
Who would I have in front? Does it have to be a comedian?
No, it could be anyone you like. Can be anyone or anything.
Well, my first thought was like Sarah Pascoe or one of the vegan comedians.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
I feel bad saying it because like I really look up to her, so I'm not saying that in the couple.
Well, you would be looking up to her.
But one of the hard or maybe Ramesh, because they're vegans. Okay. So it might be Nina.
I mean, really, out of those two, I think I'd definitely go for Sarah myself. I don't know if I want Ramesh's. I imagine he's got quite a big beard on his ass as well as his ass doing. Whereas I'd imagine Sarah Pascoe's is... I've never imagined her ass. I've never imagined her anus, but I imagine it's fairly well kept.
I mean, any vegan comedian, yeah. Not a single them.
Okay. That's all of them, basically, isn't it?
Oh, they're all going on about
they
it.
They are. Yeah. Any danger of becoming a vegan?
Oh, I'm a vegetarian. Yeah.
So you can't really complain.
I watched that Netflix thing that's like geared at getting fucking cage fighting guys to be vegans. Did you see that?
No.
It's just come out. It's like all the guys that are into like MMA and stuff. It shows that Conor McGregor guy getting battered to fuck by a vegan cage fighter.
Okay.
And then it's like, you can be big and strong by being a vegan. So I watched that and that made me want to be one.
Yeah. Well, there's no reason like a vegan can't be big and strong. That's kind of, you know, as long as you're eating some protein.
Yeah, you just cut out the middleman, eh?
It's nice. Cut out the middleman. If that happened, that would ruin The Human Centipede, though, wouldn't it? If you did that. So that's not such a good film anymore. So you're on tour at the moment.
Well, no, today's the last
day. Is it?
After I'm going to do my last one after this.
Wow.
But then I got asked if I wanted to extend the tour because I sold the tour because I sold my tickets for the tour and it wasn't a disaster. And then I wasn't going to extend it. And then I was watching my friends do like a normal Saturday night comedy gig.
Yeah.
Like the people they were performing to were just idiots. So I was like, on Monday, I was like, I'll go back on tour.
Okay. No offence, by the way. No offence to you guys.
You're a podcast audience. You've got to understand. Well, what comedians have to do on a Saturday night is play to like stag and hen parties that hate you.
It's difficult. It's a different thing once you've got used to people who've decided to come and see you personally and have come and are into your stuff. Then that's a lovely audience to play to generally.
Yeah.
And then if you go back to the clubs... you're starting from scratch with most people.
Yeah.
So it's a different beast.
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of do your more crowd pleasing stuff possibly in those kind of gigs, and you can do what you want to do in your own shows, which is understandable. So you're going to take it.
A little handful more from January, and then I'm going to film the show as a special in March at the Oran Mór.
Oh, great.
And I'm going to do the Duchess Theatre in London, which is lit off. 400 seater or something.
And there's are you going to do a new show after that, or
I need to after that. I'll start a new show in November next year, probably.
And are you writing a sitcom at the moment?
I'm writing a pilot that's never going to get handed.
And it's so different. Writing sitcoms is as we were talking about a little bit backstage, is like the worst.
Yeah.
In terms of the amount of work that goes into it and the amount of your dreams being crushed.
Yeah.
By the boot of an idiot who decides whether it goes on TV or not. What's the one you're writing? Can you talk about what it's about? Or is it? Because you did one called Radges.
Yeah, this one's about when I was a stripper and I was really bad at it and I kept telling all the guys to fuck off and stuff. I basically was a stripper with zero skills to suck up to men or like no salesmanship. And it was really hard to try and sell it to people. And then that Hustlers film came out and I was like, oh, well, that's a thing, showing strippers as real people. Except I want I don't want it to be like Hustlers where it's like, look at J-Lo's cracking body during a pole dance. I want my programme to be something people think they can have a wank to and then just feel horrified by.
You underestimate men.
Yeah, but when I worked in like the strip clubs in Edinburgh, it was always like there'd always be like sometimes Glasgow girls would come through to do shifts in the Edinburgh clubs, and like I really like Glasgow, but Jesus Christ, man, Glasgow strippers, they'd be like, oh, I've just had my nose done in the Czech Republic. Oh God, my nose has burst. So this girl came in one time with a full cast on her nose. And couldn't understand why our boss was like, you need to go home. Cause men don't want a lap dance from a girl with like blood streaming down her face. Yeah.
Beggars can't be choosers. That is the... But I know people go on about that a lot. The stripping part of the, but it's just like, I mean, you were saying in an interview, I think somewhere, that there was less sexism within the stripping industry than within the comedy industry.
Not that, it's more that it's just all laid out on the line, whereas right. in a lot of other jobs, not just in comedy, but a lot of office jobs even, people become blind to sexism that goes on.
Yeah.
I think. And a good thing with stripping was you learn to establish boundaries with men. If a guy tries to touch you, you get a bouncer, I'd take him outside and batter him. Whereas you don't have that in the comedy world.
No, that'd be useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to suggest that for future gigs. So what? They're very nice, aren't they, this audience?
Oh,
so
yeah.
far. We don't need to have any of them bad. I mean, you know, Milton Keynes is the only time I've nearly been in a fight today.
Oh, sorry, I thought you did a show in Milton Keynes.
No, I did. I was just in Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fucking horrible.
Oh, my God. My dad lives there.
Oh, really?
It's like my least favourite place to tour.
Yeah.
Sorry to anyone in Milton Keynes.
Yeah. Do come and see Fern. In... This goes out everywhere. I can't really stop it going to Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
We could try and stop Milton Keynes. That's the only thing we could try and do. It's kind of weird. 10:15, we nearly got in a fight with someone looking for a fight at 10:15 a.m.
That surprises me, though, because I find them to be very... they are very friendly in Milton Keynes.
Not this guy. Mind you, he was going to Birmingham, so it might have been...
Oh.
Luckily, he didn't get on the same train as us. There was two trains. We kind of went down the end of the platform, and then we weren't sure he wasn't there, so we walked round the back from the other platform, so we didn't see him again.
Oh, no.
And we're just grown-ups. I wanted to come to Glasgow. Like, if we got into a fight, and then go, well, I'm doing a gig. There's 1,000 people coming to see me. All right, never mind. Did you ever find your makeup that you lost at the Wales Comedy Festival?
The fuck?
I think it was you. I just remember being
in
the dressing room. Yeah.
Yeah, I
did. Did you find it? Oh, good, because I was worried. That was the first time. That was the first time I ever saw you.
I actually met you at a charity gig where you and Sean Hughes blanked me heavily.
Did we? I didn't meet you. Well, he's dead now, so you've had the last laugh.
I did a shelter charity gig. And
that doesn't sound like me.
It was you were on Sean Hughes, Stuart Lee. It was like an amazing lineup.
Was Stuart nice to you? Did he not?
Well, my first ever TV thing was his program.
Of course, yeah.
But it was Tommy Shepherd that runs the Stand Comedy Club got me on Stuart's program.
Sure.
I think Stuart seemed a bit taken aback that I did.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's very sexist, Stuart. So he won't have.
No. I just remember him saying, oh, you're very erudite when you write in The Guardian. And I knew that was a kind of codified thing of like, but you sound like this in person. Like, I'm not stupid. I know where I get stuff said to me sometimes in London that I know is code for, how can you write well but your voice is like this?
Yeah.
And it's fucked. Like, I got told, my agent said, the producers of QI came to see you and you've got the wrong energy. Well, what the fuck does that mean? It means BAM energy, does it? Yeah. But I just don't want to do that thing that Scottish people do when they move to London and start talking like Carol Smiley or whatever.
Yeah.
Or half of the Lib Dems. Joe Swenson. Do you ever fit? Because I'll sometimes be like, what lengths would you go to get famous? And then it's like, well, will you start talking like Joe Swenson to break America? Like, I just don't know if I can.
Well, I think it's good. What I really like about you is that you don't take any shit and that you don't... You know, I think it's important for comedians not to toe the line. It's difficult not to toe the line because you think, I want to get to the next stage and I want to get the work and stuff. But I think if you stay true to who you are, then you'll do better in the long run. That's what I like about you.
Oh, thank you.
I've
really burned a lot of bridges.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. If you burn bridges with the people who ultimately are idiots, don't talk to me about it because I don't really have any kind of career. And I've burnt a lot of bridges. I've had to put on my own stuff. That's the only way. The only way I can get a job is if I employ myself. It's worked out okay.
Yeah, but that's the way forward.
It is,
Lemmy's saying about his
I know,
Steven,
yeah.
It's Twitch stuff, yeah.
Well, we'll talk about that. Hey, look, we're going to have to go because there's a cab waiting to take you to your next gig. It's gone very, very fast. Do check it. If you haven't seen Fern, do check out, go and see her live.
Well, yeah, come to my big Oran Moore show.
Yeah, come to Oran Moore. He's here in Scotland. It's part of Scotland. It's not.
Yeah, but well, these Americans are flying over. I've got like a proper producer and director coming to film it here. It's like a proper thing.
It's going to be amazing. Of course, you know, even though it's in Scotland, it's going to be a proper thing. Don't do the Scottish people down. They're a great lot of people up here. Shit, I've really blown it. I nearly got off. I could have got off, and the rest of the show would have been fine, and now I've ruined it. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause for Fern Brady!
Thank you, darling.
We'll be back next week. Come back next week if you can. You have been listening to Rahala Stuffer with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Fern Brady. Thank you to Pest for continuing to provide me with music. Thank you to everyone at the wonderful Theatre Royal Glasgow, our biggest audience of all time. You were awesome. I'm indebted to my producer, James Hingley. I'm indebted to my series producer, Ben Walker. I am particularly indebted to my executive producer, Jarve Remilliard. That's right, Jarve Remilliard. I like the sound of this guy. We called him Jarve the Marv on set. That was the nickname. And Remilliard the Billiard, we called him as well. We had lots of nicknames for this guy. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to GoFasterStripe.com. You can buy emergency questions books. You can buy Trump games that will help us make more podcasts and also provide you with hours of entertainment in this difficult time. You can also buy my downloads of all my shows, DVDs and other books, and also the DVDs and downloads of lots of fantastic comedians, or become a badger. GoFasterStripe.com/badges and get lots of extras and loads of cool stuff and be a cool kid forever. There's a badge and everything that proves it. Thanks for listening, guys. We really appreciate it. See you on the next one. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.